Welcome to Play the Advantage U.S. Men's National Team Podcast. I'm Danny Day alongside Cody Carlson. Cody and I were college soccer teammates, and we are big U.S. Men's National Team fans. This podcast covers everything U.S. Men's National Team related. And welcome back. Here we are once again, Danny Day alongside Coach Cody Carlson. We are here for Play the Advantage U.S. Men's National Team Podcast. And Cody, before we get going, we've got a special guest today. So can you go ahead and introduce our special guest for the podcast?
Absolutely, Danny. It's a privilege and an honor to have Ralph Perez on our podcast. You and I both played for Coach Perez at Redlands here at the college. And I have the honor to still coach with him. And he's a living legend in this country, coaching icon. He's coached at every college division. He's coached professionally in MLS. And he's coached with our U.S. national team and under 20 teams and Olympic teams. And he's won numerous awards along the way, including the prestigious Walt Chisowitz Award. So it's my honor and privilege to introduce Ralph Perez to our podcast. Coach, good morning. Welcome. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic here with two of my former great players that played for me, came in together at the same time, roommates and still lifetime friends right now. But I think, you know, for me, the fact of being asked to be on this podcast is great because I've been waiting. I've heard about your podcast. I've heard them. Coach has shared them with me. So I'm anxious to participate today.
Fantastic. Well, we are glad to have you, Coach. And Cody gave a little bit of your bio. You've coached at every level there is in U.S. soccer, including the U.S. men's national team. And that's what our podcast is focused on. But can you just give us a little bit of background on your coaching history just to provide some background for our listeners?
Sure. I'll give a real short version because it's a long career. Started coaching at a middle school in East L.A., and then went on to collegially at Whittier College, which we both are familiar with in our conference, and then went on to a couple of schools there. That back then it was all part-time, so I was a school teacher during the day and trying to be a college coach as well, Whittier College and Cal State University of Fullerton. And then I had the opportunity to go to Cal State LA and start that program, and they just won the Division II national title this past year. We got there in 4 years to the final but lost. Went on to Santa Clara University, and then it really got interesting after that. I was involved with the Region 4 ODP, and then was asked to be by Bob Gansler, the under-20 assistant coach in 1987. And then Coach and I coached in the under-20 World Cup in Saudi Arabia and finished fourth. And to this day, still the best finish for a men's team in World Cup competition. And then Coach appointed me the next under-20 coach, and then that lasted only 2 months, never coached it except one time against a pro club. He asked me to come on and join him try to qualify for the World Cup in Italy, which we had not been a participant in the World Cup since 1950 in Brazil. So it's a 40-year drought. And, I know that Mr. Carlson here is a big fan of the Miracle of Ice movie about our U.S. hockey Olympic team in 1980. I think the miracle on grass of what we achieved to get to the World Cup in Italy in 1990 was a fantastic achievement that still to this day I feel doesn't get the credit or the respect of that challenge. I think maybe people are seeing it more now with the present run to try to get to Qatar. There's a lot of similarities there. But going back to the career, coaching at Old Dominion after the World Cup and then getting the chance when Major League Soccer started in 1996 was something I felt I had to do, I wanted to do. And it was a gamble, it was a risk, it was a challenge, but it was a great opportunity to coach in my hometown in New York at Giant Stadium and then come to Los Angeles and coach where I started my coaching career with the LA Galaxy. And that's it in a nutshell, except the last 15 years. Which my family and I never expected that. It's the longest I've been anywhere, and here at the University of Redlands. And it's been a real special place to work at, and special players, special coaches that have coached with me. And we've had some fun, and I've had some good success. And like always, we still have some unfinished business.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Thank you.
Well, Coach, thanks for sharing your background a little bit more. Can we go back to kind of the 1990, qualifying cycle where you were an assistant coach on the national team staff? You know, I guess what Danny and I would like your insight on is during that CONCACAF World Cup qualifying campaign, you know, maybe what was the hardest place to play at? What was the journey like for the U.S. men's national team to qualify for the first time in 40 years?
Well, I think, again, the lack of documentation, the lack of footage, the lack of knowledge, quickly, I'll give you a short version, it has to go back to our qualification in the under-20s, because we go to play a friendly in Mexico and beat Mexico 2-0 in San Miguel Allende prior to the tournament for qualification. And then Mexico is found to have overage players. So we finished in a spot to not go to Saudi Arabia. Mexico was disqualified, so that got us in. So that disqualification. And the punishment that Mexico got from FIFA was they could not participate in the next World Cup in Italy. They also were suspended for the next Olympics in Barcelona. So that made the pathway, to be very honest, a little easier. We must say that. We must preface that with that comment. But still, that being said, CONCACAF at that time was ahead of us in many ways. Obviously, pro league, no pro league. Obviously, ahead of us that they had a good long history of soccer, whether it's Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, Costa Rica, Canada, you name it. So the path to go to any World Cup through CONCACAF is a tough road to navigate. When you go down there to play in some of the stadiums that you're asked to play in are intimidating, the proximity of the fans to the field, the strong dislike for the, as they would say, the gringos, the U.S. team, was not something that you experienced in America. You might experience that a little bit in college basketball, maybe college football, but from a soccer perspective, that's new to our guys. And then I think the hardest place to play would be in Costa Rica because of that stadium, the way it is, and their fan base. But the number one place, let's call it spade a spade, I've seen the games, I've been there to coach in that stadium, Azteca Stadium, is phenomenal. The sound stays in that stadium. The only stadium that we had in America that we played in that's equivalent to that is RFK, the old RFK Stadium, where the Washington Redskins played, and obviously DC United. So when you get that crowd there, it's amazing. It's amazing to the point where the distance that Coach Carlson is giving, we have to yell at each other to be able to be heard with the fan support. I think the one thing that people need to understand, and they see it in many ways through our collegiate football, is the fanatic feeling of a fans behind their team win, lose, and draw. And those games are massive in trying to get to the World Cup because every country that enters the World Cup competition wants to make it. Everyone dreams of making it, you know. And during that qualifying run, you know, the previous teams, for example, in 86, obviously Mexico was the host nation. Canada went in 86. 82 in Spain, you know. El Salvador went. Okay, so we had a tough pathway, and it was at that time one, and this World Cup was only going to be two bids, not like four that we see now, because the World Cup was a smaller numbers of teams that made the finals. So, real quick, that challenge to get to the World Cup, nobody, and I mean nobody, coaching staff or player, had that experience. None of us. There was no one from the 85 qualifying team, which I saw lose in El Camino Junior College Stadium to Trinidad in the last game, and Costa Rica went and knocked us out. It was very frustrating. And I thought that at this point in time, walking out of that stadium, I said to Mr. Welch, I'm fed up with us not making it. I'm really upset. We got to change this. We got to do something better, blah, blah, blah. And little did I know, 4 years later, I was in the hot seat. And now, okay, you talk about it, go do it, do something. And that was Walt's way of saying, shut up and let's see if you can get us there. And that was the big challenge for Coach Gansler and I. And I have to say, I think it's a great accomplishment, not because I was on that staff, but I think it duly noted that all the odds were against us.
So real quick to touch on that as well, Coach, you know, the 1990 World Cup qualifying cycle, first time we got it done and qualified in 40 years. And like you were touching on, I enjoy watching the, you know, the history of the U.S. hockey team in the 1980, you know, beating the Soviet Union, miracle on ice. And you term this the miracle on grass, right? And this is going back to, you know, that wonder strike by Caligiuri, wasn't it? To get us the win, to get us to qualify. Can you reflect on that for us?
Sure. The first thing I have to say, though, is that the game that we played previous to the final game against Trinidad, we had a good chance to help our case. We played El Salvador, but we drew. So that turned the table on us that now the last match, no longer did it have to be just a tie in El Salvador by not getting the max points. We had to win. And I think that was a bonus in God's sent way, because I don't think we're sophisticated enough to say, all right, boys, we're going down to Trinidad just to get a draw, and that'll get us to the World Cup. The fact that we must win, I think, works with our psyche, works with our mentality, works with our youth. And as we prepared in Florida to go down to Trinidad, it had a lot of emotion. It had a lot of nervousness. It had a lot of do or die. Biggest games of our lives. The fans in Trinidad were the best I've ever seen in the world as far as sportsmanship. Their president already declared Monday a national holiday, because if Trinidad drew, they were going to the World Cup and we were out. So it was a must-win for us. And when Paul Caligiuri hit that shot, sometimes you tell yourself in your brain, what's he doing? That's too far. And Paul caught it perfectly. I thought Bruce Murray said it best, and there's a photo of him reaching to the sky with his hands above his head, was that the keeper was a little bit too much in a bad position. The sun was in his eye, whatever you want to call it. But it was a perfectly hit ball at a perfect time. And as we all know, games, what can change a game is a goal. And clearly that moment with that goal really put us all a little bit of a deep breath, a sigh that, hey, we can do this. Getting it when we got it gives you a chance to really navigate the next X amount of minutes. We dodged some bullets. We even dodged a referee's call that day. The Argentinian guy, a lot of people say, swallowed his whistle when John Doyle took a guy down in the box. We held our breath. But at the end, when that whistle blew, it was emotional, and for a lot of reasons, but probably the biggest relief was made soccer continue in this country, because the World Cup was coming in 94, and if we didn't make that Italy World Cup, that would be an embarrassment that the next World Cup, folks, is in USA, and they couldn't even get to the World Cup. And then also there was the Latin press, because they were the ones that really covered. It's not much American press except for USA Today and so forth, and a few local papers like Long Island Newsday and so forth, that covered us. And clearly, that was massive to get that goal and qualify for the World Cup. And then it became really a lot of work after that to try to now prepare for a World Cup.
Fantastic. Well, what a incredible story, incredible memories. What it would have been like to have been there, I can only imagine. But so you were then an assistant coach for the U.S. there at the 1990 World Cup in Italy. Do you have maybe a best memory or two from that experience?
Yeah, well, I think the memories were great. There's a lot of them. But probably the biggest thing was that you qualified in November of 89. Now the draw is in 90, and you find out that you're in the World Cup with the host nation, Italy. You're in there with the Czech Republic, who just beat England in England 5-0. And then you get drawn in the third team, and you think maybe we'll get a little break. We get Austria. So we had three European teams in our group. And then they stuck us in, obviously, they're probably saying the weak link, the USA guys. So, you know, the best memory is the game against Italy, clearly. The Czech Republic game is one that you want to forget when you lose 5-1 and play with a man down for 70 minutes. But most people, after seeing us lose 5-1 in the opener, and Italy wins against Austria in the opener, and they look fantastic, because I went to scout that game in Rome with Walt Jesuits. Our work was cut out, clearly. I mean, we're playing, I think, one of the best teams, if not one of maybe the best team in that World Cup, Italy. And, you know, most people thought, well, if Czech Republic got 5, that means Italy's going to get 10. I mean, that was the sense. And when we went to train the night before in Rome Olympic Stadium, and we're driving on the bus, and the fans are going, and they're throwing their hands like that. And Eric Winalda goes to me, look at that, they're waving to us. I said, no, you knucklehead, they're saying 10-0. So the game we played that day was brilliant. The tactical adjustments that we made by coaching and the staff were fantastic. With any adjustments you make, the players that you brought into the lineup make you either look good or make you look like that's a poor decision. The overall 90 minutes was a real testament and statement of what U.S. soccer can do and how good we really were. And I think it gained some fantastic credibility going forward for the next World Cup based on that game against Italy, the host nation, and a sold-out 80,000-seat stadium where, to this day, was the greatest environment I ever coached in my entire life.
Wow, phenomenal. So do you have who was the best player on that team in your mind for the U.S.?
Well, I love them all. We're unfortunate due to COVID. We've tried to have two reunions now, almost 30 years after that World Cup, to get together. We're going to try again this coming year. And but I would say that there were two players that were quite special in the midfield, and John Harkes and Tab Ramos. And obviously they played major roles in the next World Cup. And then, you know, Tony Meola had a lot of work to do as a goalkeeper. In that game, I mean, he faced, I think, 3 penalty kicks, maybe 4. The one against Italy hit the post, and then I think the Czech Republic got 2 penalties and missed one against us. So I would say the one guy up top that probably, you know, Bruce Murray and Peter Vermes did a really good job of challenging the opponents. And if you look at that game against Italy, Peter Vermes came from inches of scoring against the Italians, where the goalkeeper, the ball got under him and his behind made the save, and Zenga. So it's a great group. Someone that should get mentioned there is Lothar Osiander, who was the Olympic coach in 88, where 14 of those players were the base of our team for 90. And Lothar actually started the qualifications for the World Cup, because Coach Gensel and I were doing the under-20s at the time, and then Bob became the full-time first head coach there, because everybody was part-time prior to that.
I love it. Well, and before we transition maybe into this current team, I mean, you mentioned a little bit, I mean, it gets emotional even thinking about just back to that incredible World Cup run, but what is it like for all of our listeners to hear, to represent your country on the world's biggest stage?
I would have to say it's amazing to put the colors on, to hear your anthem, to represent your country and international football, as they call it. The fact that many people, when they heard us say, hey, that's the U.S. World Cup, people thought we were skiers, you know, because no one thought of World Cup soccer. So we had to keep putting that soccer behind it. And when you travel the world, everyone's saying football, not soccer. But to show you how good that group was, and it's a known fact, The first Gold Cup in CONCACAF was 1991, held in Los Angeles. And I was the assistant coach with Borja Milutinović. And we won it. And Mexico was in it, and we beat them in the semis 2-0. We won every game we played in that tournament. We won the final on penalty kicks against Honduras. So the core of that group was the 90 team. And that shows you the strength that in 1991, the first Gold Cup, the U.S. wins that. So that really showed us that we were on the right path to be successful in the international game.
Coach, Danny and I are just soaking all this in. This is great to just hear all the, you know, the stories of you being a pioneer and really paving the pathway for where we are now as a nation and USA, you know, World Cup and national team as today, as we are today, right? So just kind of transitioning forward now, you know, what do you think of the current U.S. men's national team's performances thus far in World Cup qualifying? And I guess how would you assess, you know, Coach Berhalter through his tenure with the team?
Well, I think, first of all, every Monday, as they call it, the quarterback, everybody analyzes NFL football and comes up with all what went wrong after the fact. And when you have all the facts after the fact, it's a lot easier to be critical. I've known Greg as a player when he played at North Carolina. I coached against him then when I was at Old Dominion. I know Greg when he played for the Galaxy. Got to see him up close and personal and have some good conversations with him as a player. And Walt brought him in. I mean, not Walt, sorry. Bruce brought him in as a latecomer to the team, an experienced player that was going to probably, this is going to be his last year in MLS. And then he got the job to go coach with Mr. Anchu's team in Sweden. He wanted to become a coach at the end of his career. He's learned a lot. He's growing. I think what happens to us as players and coaches all alike, you grow with the experience that you get from the game itself. And the game is always the teacher. And the best part about our game, it shows you what you did right and what you didn't do right. It's magnified even more so when now you're a national coach, because everybody is being analytical. I'm walking the sideline the other day in Las Vegas recruiting, and I heard this father pontificate about what's wrong with the U.S. team and what they need to do. And I stopped and I said, I'm going to listen to this guy. I don't know him, but what he's saying has some validity and some truth behind it. So I think Greg is learning on the job. It's a totally different job being a club coach where you have the team day to day versus a national team where you bring them in. You can't really influence them too much because they're flying across from Europe. You get them for a day or two prior to the game and let's play and then let's go. And then let's rest and recover, regenerate, and let's play, because you can't really do much from a standpoint of training. So it's got to be more tactical adjustments, more things of that nature. And I think he's learning his players. He's learning what he wants to do systematically. We all have an opinion. And I will be speaking to Greg next week personally and Ernie Stewart. I think this real quick. I think everybody thought this is the generation that's been labeled maybe the best youth generation that we've had in American soccer. Okay, but I think the title came with expectations, and those expectations weren't realistic, where people were thinking the first three games, they're going to get 9 points. They're going to go down there and do this, do that, do this. And I beg to differ. It's tough to win on the road in CONCACAF. It's tough to travel. And granted, they're doing it a lot better now than when we did it. They're doing charters. We were doing commercial. They have an opportunity to the games were not three or two at a time. We were doing it over a period of time, one game and then a break. And then we used St. Louis Soccer Park as our home. We played our games there. It was a great American home, thanks to Anheuser-Busch. But the challenge for our team and the going forward always is, can we get better? Can we get more cohesive? Can we be better defensively? and can we sort out our offense? And for me, I know Greg knows this, so what I'm saying isn't something he's not thinking. How and way, what way do we get the most out of those special players, meaning Christian Pulisic? How can we get him the ball more and where he needs to get it to be more effective? You know, and I'm sure they are addressing that in their team, their meetings, and their preparation, because these three games will not be easy by no means.
So to touch on that, Coach, and, you know, obviously this next window coming up, we've got two road games in historically very difficult venues. We're going to play Mexico in the Estadio Azteca, and then the last game of the qualification cycle is in Costa Rica. Two places where I believe, Danny, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we've ever had a win in World Cup qualifying at those venues, right? So I guess part of this question, and then when you look at this qualification cycle that we've had, we've only had one road win, and really that was just a second half performance in Honduras where we put four in the net, right? Or I think three, maybe. We won 4-1, but the first half was atrocious, right? So we laid an egg in Panama, we laid an egg in Jamaica. You know, El Salvador, we tied 0-0. Canada, we lost 2-0. So, Coach, in your experience, just why is it so hard on the road in World Cup qualifying? What are maybe some of the top factors? You mentioned a little bit, but would you mind expanding on that?
Sure. I think for climatic conditions, the surface of the field, the conditions that you go to play, whether you had played a game prior and now you're playing the second game on your cycle. Also, everyone's getting better in world football, everyone. To qualify and make a World Cup is difficult. Look at the last one in Russia. We didn't make it for the first time, which was something that we always thought we could punch a ticket to. Italy didn't make it. Holland didn't make it. I mean, Italy's right now maybe may not make it, or Portugal. So it's a challenge to win on the road. It's a mentality for sure that you have to address. Can you be good enough to get a draw? And maybe even good enough to get stealing 3 points. So in the game that you mentioned, Honduras, the substitution changes had an impact that day, and it worked. Anytime you make substitutions as coaches or changes in your lineup, everyone's thinking this is going to make us better. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You got to remember also, and this is not documented, no one's really saying it, so I'm going to say it because I like saying things that no one else says. The team. These guys, how much qualifying games that they had under their belt and experience in CONCACAF? Not much. Even as the under-20s or for the Olympics, I think it's been a travesty not making the last World Cup, but I think it's even a bigger travesty that we haven't made the Men's Olympics, which is an under-23 event. And how can we not when this is the golden generation group? So that failure is hurting us as well, that these guys don't have those games. Maybe six of them might have been on the under-20s together, and six of them may have been on the under-23 together. So you've got a core that we've gone to battle together, and we've learned to win together. So these are big challenges that they're now getting, and hopefully that now that they've played all these games, this will help us in the last three.
Okay. Well, before we finish up, I will ask you if you think we're going to qualify, but I'm not going to ask you that just yet. So we did. You mentioned it. We didn't qualify for the 2018 World Cup. How much of a setback was that? And how critical would you say is it that the U.S. does qualify this go round?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, in '89, it was imperative that we got to Italy. I feel the same way, and that's why I say there's a lot of correlations with this group and my group. I shouldn't say my group, our group, with Coach Gansler and Dr. Joe Mack, is that this group is now facing the pressure that is coming down to the end. And this group knows that that's it. That week cycle, those three games in those period of time is either going to make or break us. I was devastated. I remember like yesterday, not winning in Trinidad. And it's kind of ironic that you fast forward back. There's where we won to go to Italy. And now there's where we lost to not go to Russia. To the worst team, by the way, in the group. So it would be a big blow now to Major League Soccer, to soccer overall in this country, because surely the women's bar is so high by winning back-to-back World Cups, and the men's bar by not getting to Olympics and not getting to a World Cup and going again would be a travesty, I think, for soccer in our country. Last thing I'll say about that is that it is difficult. I get it. I understand. But where we are as a soccer-playing nation today, the expectations by all of us fans, players, coaches, all alike, are expecting and demanding that we don't go a two-cycle out of the World Cup. And that would really be bad because I think, as I heard this weekend on the broadcast, if the U.S. makes it and some of these other teams make it, this might be the most internationals that will play in the World Cup that play Major League Soccer, which is another feather in the cap for our highest level game in our country, Major League Soccer.
I think that transitions into the next question that we wanted to ask is, you know, what do you believe are the key traits of a good U.S. men's national team player or team, right? And what is the DNA that makes the U.S. men's national team who it is? Kind of relating to the players that you coached back in the day and relating them to the current squad that we have.
Well, I've had many conversations with people like Tab Ramos, Peter Vermes, Tony Maiola, John Hawks, when we were trying to put our reunion together. And knowing these guys, they're not afraid to share their opinions about what's going on, what's not right, what's wrong. I spoke to Paul Gallagher just the other day. I think all of us are behind the guys, one, and we support them. They're our brethren. We want them to be successful. We want them to do greatness. We want them to win a World Cup. It would be nothing better. But that being said, what I've always liked about my guys, American players, is that we got a grit. We got a true grit about us that, just like our mentality with our military, we're going to go in there and we're going to take odds, sometimes big odds against us, and we're going to go and get the job done. And it's tough, but we welcome that charge. And I think when we play good teams, we can measure up. You know, we've beaten Brazil, we've beaten England in friendlies, and we won the group in South Africa when England was in our group. So I think we're good, but what we have to have is the right mentality. And like any team, you can have a bunch of great players, but you have to bring it together and you got to mesh it and make that, you know, the word that a lot of people use in the 21st century is chemistry. I was never good in chemistry, but I get what that means. You know, you're experimenting. You got to make sure that experiment doesn't blow up in your face. So it's the right mix. And I know the right, what we talk about, system of play, style of play, these are words that we use in the coaching terms, finding the right style. And, you know, you got to be careful. You want to play with what you're capable of, what brings out the most in your talent. We're a group of guys right now that I think have all the things that you want in a soccer player, meaning good skill, good technique overall in tight spaces, good tactical knowledge of the game, and then also, like Coach Carlson likes to use, the athleticism that you have to play the game in the modern game today in the 21st century. You want players that can get up and down. But we wanted that also in the 20th century, though, that be known. And we had those guys, Paul Gallagher as an outside back. We had Tab Ramos that went box to box, John Hawks that went box to box. We didn't have a holding midfielder. John Hawks had to do what he had to do, and then maybe Marcelo Balboa and John Stolmeyer had to do that dirty work as far as that defensive player. But I think that the pathway now is very clear of what the U.S. has to do. They have to be better defensively. They've got to be better in transition in the game. I think they have to be better in their movement of the ball to expose the opponent. I think we're playing sometimes too direct, sometimes too slow. So when to speed it up, when to slow it down, that whole fine-tuning needs to come together. And you got to be able to produce and not get shut out. You got to score goals. You got to find ways to either get the point or 3 points, whatever it's going to take to get the final goal to Qatar.
So, yeah, that is the goal, to get to Qatar. If you were the coach of this current team, you know, what tactics and formation would you use? And ultimately, do you think the U.S. is going to get it done here in this March window? Two away games, one home game. Or are we going to see the U.S. in the World Cup?
Well, you know, we're all creatures of habit, meaning system of play. And I've been blessed to work with two guys that I think internationally are phenomenal coaches. One guy won a World Cup in Carlos Alberto Pereira from Brazil. And the Brazilians always like a 4-4-2. That's their staple. They always shape and change it different ways, like to get their outside backs into the attack. They always get two defensive-minded players in the middle of the park to allow everybody else to go forward. And then I watched and worked with him, Carlos Queiroz, who just now is working for Egypt, did two World Cup cycles with Iran. He's coached Portugal. He's coached Real Madrid, Manchester United. And work with these guys, one of the things that I think is very important is, you know, you have knowledge. Everyone has knowledge of the game as a coach. But do you have the ability to transfer that knowledge to the players and get the players to understand tactically what you're trying to do from all aspects, whether it's offense, defense, restarts, whatever it may be? And can you utilize that? So I know that we want to play in a modern game now. Everyone's looking. You see a lot of international clubs and teams play 4-3-3, you know, 4-5-1. I mean, it's all numbers, it's semantics. But at the end, I think that for me, I think the U.S. is going to make it. I think the U.S. is going to make it very dramatically. I think it's going to come down to the last game.
Oh, boy.
In Costa Rica. I'm blocking those times off for those three games so that I can see them. I think the challenge is sometimes you need a little help, some other results to go your way, which we didn't get in the last cycle on the last day. Every possible result that you didn't want went against you that night. And so, you know, a little luck goes a long way. But again, I think you have to make your own. So the first game in Azteca is going to be massive because we've only gotten a tie there under Steve Sampson's result. And I remember that game very clearly, that by getting a red card, it forced us into a shell defensively. And that's what we did for 90 minutes. And then I'm telling you to go to Costa Rica. It is brutal. They'll find out the hotel you're at. They will bang drums all night. They will make sure you don't get a good night's rest, even though you try to keep it as a COVID operation where you are, when you're coming, what you're doing. These fans will do anything to help enhance their team's success. So it's two places, as you mentioned earlier, that we've never gotten three. So can we do it? Yes, but can we realistically do it? I believe so. I'm a big believer in always thinking the Adidas slogan that, you know, nothing's impossible. And then obviously the game at home, you got to maximize your points at home always, no matter what. You always got to get three at home and get one on the road. That's kind of always been the formula to get to a World Cup.
Absolutely. Man, well, I love your positive outlook. I'm excited for this March window. I know Cody is as well. Cody, you have any kind of final questions for Ralph Perez here as we finish up?
Yeah, I think I guess I'd like to know, Coach, do you got a favorite player on this current roster? Someone that you're really always excited to watch?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I follow the team and I follow soccer worldwide, but especially for my country. I'm excited about Christian Pulisic. I think he's special. I saw him play as a youth player. Saw him play for our youth national teams up close in person down in Florida. Seeing him play in Germany, seeing him play with Chelsea, I think is exciting. And it's a big burden on his back, you know, just like it was for Landon Donovan as well, someone I know very well as a player and as a person. You know, say what you want. Everybody has different feelings. But I tell you, I think Winston McKennie is a winner. He's a tough guy. And you don't make it to Juventus and play there unless you can really do the job. talking to people that saw him play in Texas when he was growing up. And then the last guy, because I'm going front to back, I like Zimmerman. I had the chance to meet him at the All-Star game and have breakfast with him and his family when he played for then LAFC. And when you get a chance to talk to people off the field, you really get an insight to the person. And then seeing him with his family, just like we do in college recruiting, I thought that this young man is special. So I hope that he's a fixture in the lineup. And last but not least, the goalkeeper from New England that shocked the world as far as he came out of nobody's radar as far as a keeper. And his story is a great story of where he came from and how he's gone on. And now when this cycle's over, he's going to go and go and play in Arsenal, EPL. So it's fantastic to see these guys. And I'm excited. I'm excited. I can't wait. I mean, we still got to wait a couple more weeks, but it's surely exciting. I mean, you will watch the Spanish channels, folks. You can get excited because they cover 24/7. Our channels, hopefully it'll pick up in the weeks coming.
I love it. I love it. Well, I know both Cody and I are excited, and Coach Perez, this has been fantastic to have a chance to hear all your insights, the history with the U.S. men's national team, and looking ahead towards this March qualifying window. So thank you again for joining us, and for Cody. I'm Danny. This has been Play the Advantage, U.S. men's national team. Thanks, everybody, and go USA.